Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Okay, I've got the brass lantern and the engraved sword. Where do I go now?
Over there, in the media corner.
I wonder what's under this rug.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Flight crew? What kind of flight are we taking these people on? Welcome to Technorama. Yeah. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, hey, welcome. We appreciate you giving us your time. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. What compelled you to do that again?
It's like I know.
Hitting your hand with a hammer.
There's no money involved.
I am Chuck Tomasny with a bit of a sore throat. And with me, as always, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Oh, hold on a second. I was taking a drink. I'm doing good.
A drink of Drano?
Yeah. I'm doing good, man. I came back from sunny San Diego this week and to the frigid south. Like freezing here.
Unfortunately, we have nobody else in the studio here. We could pan around and looking at a bunch of empty chairs, but it wouldn't be. Yeah. See, nobody here.
Here's your proof.
That's why we have a room cam. So when nobody shows up, we can prove it. So it's just Craig and I. It's traditional Technorama again.
Yeah, it's proper.
Classic? What do you want to call it?
Technorama classic. It tastes just like the real original.
We've gone back to the original formula.
That's right.
We found out that new Technorama wasn't working so well.
Yeah, new Technorama. Yeah, we fired everybody.
All right. Then without further delay, let's get into the show. We have coming up in this episode. Which one is this one? iPad. There we go. Yeah, I have to bring down the right faders. Five Finger Neil, Skynet, and Mel Brooks. All that and more coming up right after this.
He rolls 20 every time. He laid out plans for man to reach Mars and return safely on a cocktail napkin. The next day, it was approved. He always knows where his towel is. He is the most interesting geek in the world.
I don't always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to Technorama. Stay geeky, my friend.
Hi, this is Dave Slusher from Evil Genius Chronicles, and you are listening to Technorama, because you're in the cool club.
I thought he was going to say, this is Dave Slusher from work.
He could. Hey, by the way, and we'll get to it in just a minute, but we do have some voicemail from somebody at work.
We do. Oh, yes, we do. Well, we have some email.
Yeah, we got email from somebody. Actually, I was like, I saw it come in on my phone, and I started reading. And went, wait a minute, what email client am I in? Wait, this is work.
Right. Yeah. So I thought, well, were we talking to him about that? Oh yeah, I guess we were. All right, let's not keep the listener waiting any longer. We will go into our mailbag.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters.
Reach right out and pull one out.
Those letters, I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh boy!
Mailman, mail today.
What? I love deep voice, Chuck.
I said no singing.
I got your new nickname. We're going to call you Deep Throat.
Geek Throat.
Geek Throat. Hey, baby. Would you like a little Barry Williams?
Yeah. We got an informant. What's his name? Geek Throat.
We have Zaha Doom, and Zaha Doom has sent us a three-part thing, so I will try to pause it at the appropriate times.
Hey, guys. Zaha Doom. Just finished the last show. Loved it as usual.
Thanks.
I got a couple of questions. One, How do you get to the chat room? Because I tried Sunday night and kept thinking you could YouTube.
Okay, how do you get to the chat room?
Okay, for right now, we do have the webcam page redirecting to the YouTube Live. And when we're broadcasting, it'll take you straight to the broadcast. When we're not, it takes you all our videos. So the problem is tonight, especially, we're going to turn on the IRC channel. Mm-hmm. But I thought I had some wrong in the code because I couldn't figure out why the thin stack wasn't coming back to the IRC channel. And turns out I can't even get to the website. So they're having some other problems, I guess.
We'll work with the thin stack folks about getting that resolved.
So that's what's happening.
It's a supply chain management thing.
Or I should say more accurately, that's what's not happening.
Okay. But for now, we can go through YouTube, and it actually looks better because the chat that you put into YouTube turns into comments. So it looks like it's a really popular conversation.
Hey, also, I would like to use the YouTube chat. I like the IRC, and I know there, everybody could change your handles and stuff. But also, if you're chatting, all this, it gets attached to the video. So I think it even plays back as you're watching it.
I'm really? Sure. I didn't know that. I'm going to have to check that out.
It may just show up as comments, but either way, it kind of sticks with the video.
Neat. All right. Second part of his question.
Two, we put the wiki link on the website, gives me a 404. And three, he keeps
Wait a minute. The wiki link gives him a 404? Have you checked that?
Did that go away too?
Well, I've been lazy. I've just been typing chuckchat.com/wiki.
Yeah, that's the way it should work.
Didn't
that's
we have it in a menu option?
Let's see. Yeah.
All right.
You know what? Maybe I need to update that link.
We're going to need you to put in a ticket for that, and we'll get it to our support crew right away. How's that?
Yeah.
And three.
Michael leaves all this stuff at the house. The big question is, do you leave the magic beer fridge? 101, guys.
I love that laugh at the end.
Yeah.
Did Michael left all kinds of stuff. Did he leave the magic beer fridge? No. The magic beer fridge did not stay. However, we've had a number of very gracious people come over and give us gifts of alcoholic beverages, which are slowly diminishing. So we'll have to...
Time to replenish.
Well, yes. And since Pi Day is coming up in approximately 4 weeks from the time of this recording, slightly less, Pi being March 14th, or 3.14 for those of you who are slow today, we are having a pie party at the Binary Studios.
What?
We're going to be serving pie. You can bring pie, blueberry cheesecake. I don't care. So, yes, that is going to be our spring social event.
Oh, man.
See, we've got our...
You got to give me a more lead time than that.
We've got our Technorama-rama pool party in the summer.
Okay.
We've got the holiday party at the holidays, and we've got pie party in March. Now we just need a fall fill-in thing and we'll be all set.
Pie party.
You know what
I need? I need to roaming around your house as long as a little telepresence robot so I can just control.
it's Robo Craig.
Yeah, that's exactly
Everybody
right.
waved. We have two voicemails from Jack Jaffe.
Hey guys, it's Jack Jaffe, a.k.a. Trucker Overdrive. Hey, things which were fun to listen to or play with around the back seat of the car. I guess it was one of those rich kids because I had a Walkman. And then I also had Transformers. But the first really fun thing to have was a Game Boy, which ate batteries like crazy. And it was really fun to play baseball because it made a fun sound when you hit a real good fly ball. They go, whoop, and then whoop, which was, to my dad would sound like a police siren behind him. It said his hairs the back of his neck on edge or whatever, and he'd always insist on that plug in the headphones, which was also fun because then you get to hear Super Mario Brothers in stereo, and they knew that was the first time they're using stereo, so they made sure to overuse it so you get a musical playing in both ears and stuff. Anyway, it was really fun. You guys are really cool. It's always fun to hang out with you guys at Dragon Con. Hope to see you guys next year. Bye.
That's the plan, Jack.
Hey, wait a minute. So I guess it begs the question, why was his dad so nervous about cops?
I don't know, but if he kept stabbing the brake, Jack's probably got a flat forehead from hitting the back of the front seat.
Yeah.
Whoop, boom. Oh, Dad, quit stabbing the brakes.
that explains a lot.
He's got another one.
Hey, guys, it's Jack Jaffe, a.k.a. Trucker Overdrive. Hey, let's see here. Well, I really want to thank you guys for turning me on to The Man in the High Castle, which apparently is available off of Amazon Prime. I got it. Well, I guess. I don't know. There's always everything on Netflix, so I don't really bother with Amazon Prime. But now you guys gave me a reason. And I watched it, and it's awesome. And now I picked up the Philip K. Dick novel, which it's based off of. Yeah. It's about as based off Philip K. Dick as any other Philip K. Dick book, such as We Remember You Wholesale, which was turned into Total Recall, or Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which was turned into Blade Runner. Well, the closest thing you ever get to anything which is actually like Philip K. Dick's book was A Scanner Darkly, which really wasn't having it. Now, it didn't was that commercially successful, but I liked it. Anyway, Man in the High Castle, good series, good book. If you want to read an alternate history written from, like, I think the 1960s or 1970s perspective of what things would be like, I don't know. It's interesting to put the shoe on the other foot and think about what it's like if America was conquered and how we would have an attitude about things or whatever if we were being, you know, subjugated and referred to as aboriginal. Anyway, it's interesting, and so is the TV show on two different levels. I highly recommend both. Anyway, thank you for turning me on to it, and I'm enjoying the show. Catch you guys next time. Hope to see you at the Dragon Con. Bye.
Yes.
All right. Yes. Huh? I wish Michael were here because he'd have a lot of comments. He reads way more Philip K. Dick than I do. I don't know about you.
I think he reads more, period.
That's true.
Yeah, but I know Philip, honestly, it's funny because I enjoyed that pilot as much as Jack just said. I thought it was good. It was really good. And they did the period well. I loved it when we talked about it. And sadly, it didn't even dawn on me to go look for the novel. I don't know why. Let's just ignore the source material all around.
Well, a lot of times they do adapt it. So
yeah,
if you've read the book and you're a hardcore reader, it may be one of those disappointing things. They say, it's not quite like the book, or they totally dorked that character storyline or whatever up. But
a lot of his stuff, they use the concept to make the movie. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
right.
Okay, that's a cool concept. Let's, you know, whatever. And so, yeah, I ignored the source material. I didn't even think to go look for a book to go read it. And, you know, since there's only one episode, this is a disappointing thing about the pilots. It's like, wow, that was compelling enough to have the whole season ready to go. And it sucked that it didn't, because I remember I finished and I'm like, okay, I need to review it for them, because that's what they're asking for, rating the shows on the pilot season. But at the same time, you know, it's going to take 8 months, a year before they can get a whole season out.
Well, right. And that kind of gets back to our next feedback from our coworker, Steve. He says, just watched the first episode and I want to see more. What sucks is that there will be some dependency on the reviews of the episode to make a decision on whether to pick it up for a show or not. The problem is, how do you write a review of any substance based on one episode?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Now, obviously, if you like that pilot, go ahead and say, this looks intriguing. I want to see more.
That's all you can review on it. You can say, I enjoyed it. Just like I said, I liked the period look, and they made it compelling. They made it compelling enough where you go, or you buy into the world.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a bit of that, you know, initial Battlestar Galactica pilot where you're like, ooh, this looks promising.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly.
All right. That's our feedback.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Zaha Doom. And thanks, Jack. And thanks, Jack.
Yeah.
Into the history.
Can you handle it?
I can handle the history. You can't handle the history. On this day in history, for February 18th, 2015.
Here, bring that down just a bit.
This is the 49th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 316 days remaining in 2015. It was on this date in 1885 that The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain is published in the United States.
It was 104 years ago. The first flight, a first official flight of airmail takes place from Allahabad, United Provinces in British India, now just regular India. When Henri Picquet, I'm not sure if I'm saying this
Henri
right.
Henri Picquet, I guess.
Okay. A 23-year-old pilot delivers 6,500 letters in 90.
Wow.
Hey, is that a unit measurement of time or is that place? It's about 10 kilometers away, I say.
That same date in 1954, the first Church of Scientology is established in Los Angeles, California.
And Operation Teapot Test Shot Wasp is successfully detonated in the Nevada test site with a yield of 1.2 kilotons. Wasp was the first of 14 shots in the teapot series 60 years ago today.
All I think of is that ceramic teapot in the Computer History Museum.
I keep thinking of Indiana Jones.
38 years ago today, this Space Shuttle Enterprise test vehicle is carried on its maiden flight on top of a Boeing 747, and they just decommissioned that
yes.
carrier. Darn it.
That was a mind-blowing image, by the way, seeing it on top of a...
I remember doing that speech in school.
Yeah. And it was 37 years ago today, the first Ironman triathlon competition takes place on the island of Oahu and is won by Gordon Haller.
There's a trivia question. Happy birthday goes out of this date to French astronomer Jacques Cassini. Hey, they named it... Cassini Orbiter after him. Born on this date in 1677.
And also born on this day, the man who invented the battery, Alessandro Volta.
I thought the Energizer Bunny invented the battery.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding.
February 18th, 1838 is the birthday of the man whose name is synonymous with the speed of sound. Ernst Sound. No, Mach. Ernst Mach.
Co-founder of Bethlehem Steel and American businessman Charles M. Schwab, born today, 1862.
You better talk to Chuck.
Yeah.
Right. Sharing that same birthday in 1898, Italian race car driver and founder of Ferrari, Enzo Bugatti. Ferrari.
And the cartoonist behind BC and The Wizard of Id, John Hart, was born today in 1931.
And finally, happy birthday to several actors, including Jack Palance, George Kennedy, John Travolta, Vanna White, and Molly Ringwald.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for February 18th, 2015.
Hey, John Travolta is related to the battery dude.
Yes. He's like the new version of it. He's the rechargeable Volta.
My dad refers to him as John Revolta.
Good news, anyone?
Hey, we got a good news. This is a rather interesting one that some of you may have already seen. This is not bad news. This is good news. We recovered a whole bunch of stolen goods.
Yes, right.
A secret stash of moon artifacts was found hidden in Neil Armstrong's closet.
I'm sorry, I forgot.
There's a picture here. It looks kind of like some doctor's kits things, you know. It looks like a stethoscope hiding. It's sort of like one of those seek and finds in the Highlights magazine. These are the contents of a mysterious white bag found hidden in Neil Armstrong's closet. Well, how'd that get there?
Yeah,
weird looking lamps, wrenches, utility brackets, sights, and a film camera that later was identified as the one capturing the famous Apollo 11's descent on the moon's surface. Nobody knew about it, including his widow. According to NASA, Carol Armstrong sent photos to Alan Needle, curator of the Apollo collection in the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, who immediately knew what was inside. It was a McDivitt purse filled with parts from the Eagle, Apollo 11's lunar module. And I quote, after Neil Armstrong's death, his widow Carol discovered a white cloth bag in a closet containing what were obviously either flight or space-related artifacts. She contacted Alan, curator of the Apollo collection at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, and provided photographs of the items. Needle, who immediately realized what the bag, known as the astronauts as a purse, and its contents could be hardware from the Apollo 11 mission, asked the authors for support in identifying and documenting the flight history and purpose of these contents, were purpose of these artifacts. After some research, it became apparent that the purse and its contents were lunar surface equipment carried in the lunar module Eagle during the epic journey of Apollo 11. Well, Mr. Armstrong, how did you come across these things? Included in there is, of course, as we mentioned, the McDivitt purse, which is that white bag. We have a...
What is the McDivitt purse exactly?
It's just a white pouch that they carry all this other garbage in.
Oh, here we go. The McDivitt purse, named that way in honor of Apollo 9 Commander Jim McDivitt, who wanted a stowage bag that could be positioned at the front of the spacecraft to hold items such as purge valves, which might otherwise fall onto the cabin floor. What? There's no gravity. while they were preparing for EVAs.
There's a power cable for a data acquisition camera. Looks more like a coil for a still. Yeah. There's utility lights, utility clamps, Crewman optical alignment sight. A filter.
Antimatter injector.
light bulb assembly, waist tether, and the data acquisition camera, or the DAC 16mm movie. Uh-huh. So, you know that famous movie scene as the Apollo 11 is getting closer and closer and closer, and it's filmed from the orbiter, or the lander, excuse me, filmed from the lander, and then they finally say the Eagle has landed? This is the camera. Imagine what this stuff is worth.
Oh, I know.
This is historic stuff.
You know what?
And it was just in his closet.
You know what? Yeah, I was thinking of, you know, at first I thought, maybe just how did he just bring it home by accident? But then I started thinking, remember, I've been in a...
Someone had to clean up. He was the last one out of the lander, though.
Yeah. I've been on a job interview before, and the guy asked me one of those kind of stupid trick questions.
Have you ever stolen a pen from work?
Yeah. If you take a pen home from work, is it theft? I'm like, well,
if Neil Armstrong can get away with taking the camera home.
Took the McDivitt purse. Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, it's not theft.
Honest. I thought Lovell had it or something.
Yeah.
Buzz.
I thought Aldrin took it home.
Buzz planted this on me. I swear I didn't have. He's such a joker.
That's funny.
Sorry, you know, the listener's going to get all over me. Lovell was not on Apollo 11. I know that now. All right.
You know that now.
Google knows you stink and wants to help. Our next article is rather intriguing. It takes a special patent to pique our interest these days, but Google has just been issued actual intellectual property for a device that would help others evade your stank. The odor-removing device, pictured below, is designed to, quote, emit a fragrance in response to detected parameters, unquote. But that's not the half of it. It would also detect your body temperature, heart rate, and other factors to determine if you're extra rank from working out. Not only will it then dispense perfume to cover it, put a can of Febreze on you.
There is no perfume you can cover up BO.
No, you need like a can of Febreze.
That doesn't work.
It'll even track the location of your friends and find you a route home to avoid them.
Hey, we'll start a website called Center, and on Center, it will tell everybody what your scent is.
It could also figure Center.
Like scent with an R.
It could also figure out your, quote, fragrance emission schedules, unquote. Glean from your social networks or calendar and how much you spray based on your sweat history. Google has cooked up other similarly bizarre usage cases for the device, but the illustrations do look legit. It looks kind of like a CPU cooling fan, in a sense.
It will also measure your pheromone output.
I hope the thing's quiet. Otherwise, you could be sitting there in church and all of a sudden.
No, you know, I've seen a couple movies where your shirt starts getting big like one of those.
It starts flying up like Marilyn Monroe's skirt.
I was thinking one of those sumo wrestler outfits, you know. No, but
like,
you know,
like Penn and Teller.
Oh, I know what it was. I was watching, was it Neighbors or something like that? One of those movies, and they were talking about using social networks for hooking up with people. Well, that's what I'm saying. Is this could just report your pheromone and hormone output.
Hey, hook it up to your Fitbit and you're all set. Right?
Yeah, let your friends know when you're horny.
Wow, Craig. I'm gonna change articles on you right there.
You wouldn't have to do anything.
I was okay with blowing up like a sumo wrestler because that was a good segue into the next article.
I just took it overboard. Sorry.
Yeah. We always have to go there for some reason. Last week it was Han shot first. Now he's making fun of the Google thing.
I'm sorry. I can't breathe.
Okay. When you can breathe, would you like the next article?
Sure.
Okay.
Until I saw this big Yoda head.
That's what it is.
Okay. So Yoda shaped hot air balloon to appear in the Canberra spectacular.
Canberra.
Yeah.
Did you know where that is?
Now, where is Canberra?
Australia.
Oh, I was going to say Canada. I'm close. So, a massive hot air balloon shaped like the Star Wars character Yoda will take to the skies over Canberra as part of the city's 2015 balloon spectacular this month.
Yay.
Next month, rather. The monster Yoda balloon is slightly smaller than the balloon shaped of the arch enemy Darth Vader, which visited in the national capital in 2013, which I think we've talked about earlier in another episode, like a long time ago.
Yes, it was almost as big as Dark Helmet.
That's right. And an Angry Birds balloon in honor of the popular game will be among those in the 30 giant hot air balloons traveling the national capital for the event. Some of the balloons will come from the United States and Belgium to participate. The annual festival will see dozens of balloons take off from lawns all over the old Parliament House during March. And I was thinking lawns like people's yards, you know.
Right.
And it's been a popular
tourism. Get off my lawn, you giant Yoda.
Yeah. Actually, the balloon, the picture down below has the Angry Bird.
Yeah.
But it has like a cactus and a dragon.
I think that's Yoshi. Really cool ones. Can't tell.
Is that? Oh, maybe it is Yoshi. Okay. But there's a bunch of really cool ones.
Yes, right? Very creative.
Mm-hmm. I bet that'd be fun to go shoot some pictures. You know, I sort of say shoot, but you don't want to shoot.
No, don't shoot the balloons. The cactus would look good out here. I mean, on any given evening, you can look out over the western side of Phoenix and see, you know, anywhere from 2 to 9 balloons in the air. It's very mm-hmm. popular, especially this time of year.
Yeah. So, and it could be the popular there because of maybe there's not so much wind because, you know, they can't do this wind. It's really windy.
Thank you, listener Doug in Australia, for sending us that article. We appreciate it.
And by the way, for those dates, if you are in Australia, it may be happening between March 7th and 15th, depending on weather conditions. Say so.
Yeah. Yay. All right. Turning to the listener birthday calendar, we have February 18th. Is Ray Insalaco from Central Village, Connecticut. Thank you very much. Two birthdays on the 19th. Scooter in Connecticut also. Wow, Scooter and Ray. You guys got to get together. And Steve in Sumter on the 19th. The 23rd is our faithful listener, Zaha Doom. Oh, happy birthday. And happy birthday also on the 23rd to Keith Hughes, a.k.a. Ed Gizmo. So we have five of them this week that we know about. And we want to know yours. If you are out there and you have a birthday this week and you're not on the calendar yet, happy birthday to you. Make sure you go over to chuckchat.com/wiki and put your name on there.
And we will get
the link fixed right away.
It's already fixed.
Well, how's that for support?
Yeah.
Wow. We're going to have to give a raise to our tech support crew.
Yes, finally. I've arrived.
You get a 5% raise this year.
That's right.
That's 5% more alcohol than you got last year.
5 times 0 is still 0. Oh, well.
Okay, you're doing all right. Okay, quick break, and we will be right back. One of these faders will get me there. With Hacks and Strange Stories and a couple of Remember When. So stick around.
Technorama presents Real Geeks of Genius. Real Geeks of Genius.
We salute you, Mr. Overused Email Sender.
Mr. Overused Email Sender.
You choose to spend 20 minutes writing an email to the person in the cube next to you rather than get up and talk to them for 3 minutes.
It's only 10 steps.
You've got all the short keys memorized, especially reply all.
Love the big file attachments.
You'll pay the extra money for your personal Gmail account just to get the extra storage for all the sent mail.
100 gig a year isn't enough.
Birthday cards and thank you notes look just fine on canned stationery in email. After all, it's the thought that counts.
Antisocial!
You know, the IT department is going to dedicate an exchange server just for you, sooner or later.
Mr. Overused Email Sender!
Sponsored by Technorama, who remind you to geek responsibly at chuckchat.com.
Hi, this is Dean Hagel from The X-Files, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
I want to believe.
I think that's why my throat hurts from singing like that.
I think my throat hurts.
My throat is beginning to hurt.
That's right.
Let's find that one again.
If you want me to take this, I will take this next one.
What? Oh, hold on.
Hacks and Street Stories.
All right,
my
go ahead.
My throat is starting to hurt.
Skynet? Is Skynet here or Skynet there?
It's over. It's on the floor, actually.
That's where it starts.
Wait, am I looking at the right article? Yeah.
Yeah. Go. The Roomba.
That's right.
Go for
the
it.
Roomba. That's the beginning of Skynet. Well, iRobot, Skynet. Maybe yes. They did merge at some
yes.
point. All right. So seen here in mid-rescue, and there's a picture in the article that I'm semi-sort referring to, is a Southern Korean woman who remained calm while paramedics removed the robot vacuum that wanted to eat her brains. So it's kind of like iRobot zombie thing.
That's you know. Where they go.
So apparently the woman was taking a nap on the floor when the attack occurred.
Attack. Because the room is just roaming around. All of a sudden it goes, victim.
Here is my chance.
Kill all humans.
They've come to my level. So I'm trying to read this, but there's a question right here. When my local liquor store got robbed? Oh, well. Anyway, so her hair got tangled into the iRobot and she snapped on the floor. So unable to free herself, she called the fire department with a desperate rescue plea and was separated from the robot's clutches by paramedics, according to the South Korean newspaper, which I can't pronounce.
Yeah. Kyung Yang Shimin. Okay. Wow. Don't fall asleep while your Roomba's roaming around is the moral of that story.
Well, I thought I guess I could see where it would get hair, but if you were just laying on the floor, little brushes would detect you and move on, right?
You'd think it'd bump into you or something. Well, she must have longer hair because the bristles are not right at the edge. Well, I guess they'd have to be if you wanted to clean around the edge of the room. I don't know. I haven't taken a real close look at a Roomba. Anyone else had this problem?
You can get that one that you can take apart. Remember that?
Oh, when yeah.
You, yeah.
Oh, the $200 hackable one.
Yeah.
All right. From CGW.com, we have Imagining Zork.
Yes. Uh-huh. I'll take this.
Do tell.
You sound like you're having trouble trying to talk.
Go ahead.
All right. So a classic game shrouded in mystery, a cold, deep west central Wisconsin cave, which Chuck should know well. Two professors. Who wanted to experiment a little. It sounds like a makings of a Halloween thriller. For Kevin Pantuti. Sir say Petunia. And Dave Beck from the School Art of Design and Design of University of Wisconsin Stout. It was even better than that. They devised a semester-long innovative course project that channeled the power of the game Zork, challenged their students, and used cutting-edge industry technology. Pantuti and Beck brought their students together from multiple classes, digital cinema and advanced 3D modeling and animation, to explore the convergence of cinema, animation, and games. Working in teams, the students created an animated short film or trailer for Zork, one of the world's first interactive games. Zork, a text-based game created in the late 70s at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, represents the dawn of the game design. The engine understands basic text commands such as look up, go east, open mailbox, you take sword.
Wait.
I threw that one in there. Wait.
There is a wait command. One of my favorite commands is wait. It says time passes. Yeah. And if you type wait again right away, it says more time passes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there were some cool little Easter eggs in there like that. So each of these commands solicits a response from the game that describes the outcome of the command. The game was later divided into three sections and distributed by Infocom and is still a cult classic, has a following today. Of course, I love this, all those text adventure games. Although Zork does not include video, it remains popular in an age dominated by video games. So anyway, it goes through and you can get, there's a link to the actual student videos or some of them that they made. I guess it's not all of them. I'm not sure. But you can see some of the screenshots, which I thought, the one thing I thought about this, and maybe it doesn't, it's not apparent to them, but I remember that one of the marketing phrases from Infocom was, you know, it's the best graphic engine is the one in your brain.
Donna was watching the IT Crowd last night and she came across the one where Moss was, he convinced the corporate guests to play an RPG. He says, and the guy says, what is this? Some kind of computer game? And he goes, only it uses the most powerful processor in the world. The human mind.
Yes, right.
At first, they're like, I don't think I want to play this. And then they cut to the next scene. Like, oh, what did I roll for critical? Yes. And they're all into it and everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was funny.
That was very funny.
So if you go to our web show notes, or if you poke around in that article, you'll find there's a link to the student videos. And I linked to them straight in our show notes. And there, one of them was pretty cool. One of them used like the Unreal 3D engine, you know, for originally set up with the Unreal game. And it's funny because the guy kind of walks, but he looks like he's kind of has that floating effect, like video games that like the feet don't actually track the floor very well. So it looks like they're almost like moonwalking across the floor.
Sort of like the quick 3D renderings before the final rendering is done.
Yeah.
Where you see Shrek and Donkey walking along in wireframe.
Right. That's right. And their feet are out of sync of the floor. So what's funny is you see him pull the carpet back and go down into the hole, into the hidden door. And when he gets down there, he's got the lamp, but the lamp is misrendered, and it looks like the light is coming from his crotch. I was like, oh, boy.
Do we have any listeners in the chat room?
Probably not now.
Not anymore.
Oh, look.
Park, who goes there?
State your
name and rank and armor class.
B.S. Simon. Hello from Big B.S. in P.A.
Big BS.
Hello.
I thought we were the big BS.
Yeah. So we got one listener in there. We need to work on this because.
Yes. Well, we're not doing our job at promoting it before the show starts.
Yeah. You got to tell everybody.
And this is only week three of actually having a video back. So, yes, we will continue to.
It was still a beta.
Socialize.
Still in beta.
Still in beta. We'll take the beta tag down when we get three listeners. In the Remember When, we have the enormous car boat that probably needed oceans of oil to run.
That's about right.
And Donna was talking about this. We need to get these graphics over on the video feed. So I'll have to do a little more prep on Saturdays so that we have time to get this up and running. We really, really want to show you these cool pictures. Life for Americans after World War II is supposed to be filled with open roads and open waters. The roads, more often than not, were getting to work. And the water?
that was pure leisure time.
Yeah.
This watermobile of 1947 was imagined to provide the best of both, with an enormous, and one imagines gas-guzzling, six-wheeled amphibious vehicle. From the December 1947 issue of Mechanics Illustrated magazine, and I quote, "The millions of ex-GIs who watched wartime amphibious craft climb dripping up the beachheads will recognize the substance of dreams of their own in their vacationer." That's what they call this boatmobile.
Vacationer, yeah.
An enormous, I mean, amphibious luxury cruiser proposed by industrial designer Robert Zeidman for practical peacetime use. The new civilian amphibian is a descendant of some of the Navy's experimental vehicles, not the Army's familiar Duck. It promises a substantial highway speed of 55 miles an hour and a respectable 10 to 20 knots afloat. Efficient land speed was the first consideration in specifying power. The excellent showing on water is due to improved lines and the twin screws in tunnels, driven by the twin motors in the stern, twin rudders given maximum maneuverability. Wow, nice. I'd hate to see one of these things coming at you on the street.
Actually, you know what? I'm looking at this red picture, and I can just imagine some of the Pixar car eyes on the windshield and a big smile. This thing is screaming for that. No, this is cool. But you know what amazes me about some of these articles we pull up like this is, look at the date. It's like 1947, and we're thinking about this kind of stuff.
That's pretty futuristic. Retro future.
And Art Deco as well.
We also have a message sent in from listener Myron about a 25-year-old.
Whoa. Keep going. No, we can't pass this thing up just yet.
But the boat?
Yeah, so I'm looking at the overhead picture of the schematic. Not schematic, but overhead cutaway.
Yes.
And I see a bar, a bulkhead. There's three B's right there.
Bar, bunk, and bulkhead.
Wait a minute. In a bookcase, there's another B. And it's like they almost have it in alphabetical order. So we go to couch bunk.
Refrigerator, sink.
A couch bunk. So we got a bunk, bulkhead, a bunk, and a couch bunk.
Bake deep dishes.
Freeze, got deep freeze refrigerator, sink, dishwasher, Pyrex bake oven.
Bake stove oven. Okay.
Yeah. So we got a shower. Shower seat.
Gotta have a seat in your shower.
In a driver's seat. The chemical toilet, lavatory bathroom, seat, another seat, baked dishes, table unit, seating, dining, seat dining, cabinet bunk.
Television.
They got bunks all over the place.
They have a couch bunk.
Yeah, they got television, which is just kind of out in the ocean.
A companionway.
That's right.
Hatches and motors.
So your wife is up front cooking. You have a companionway for your companion.
It only has one seat up front, so you can only have the driver up front.
Yeah, that's right.
Heaven forbid anyone else should watch what's coming.
Motor hatches.
Craig, the link on your next show, the next link is broken. It just points
it's
to the
broken
half a satellite dish picture. You got to get better at pasting links. I didn't put that in there.
Wait a minute. Which one are you talking about?
The one from listener Myron, the 25-year-old computer.
Oh, did it?
Okay.
Hold on. Well, anyway, I'll tell you what he was talking about. I'll fix the link after this. But he was talking about the Commodore 65.
What?
I know. I was like, I don't think I've ever seen that. And the reason is because Commodore has started work on a follow-up to the Commodore 64. After success with the Amiga, the 65 had a lot of the 8-bit components that were popular with the 64 mixed in with some of the components that made the Amiga popular. So
one more K of RAM.
That's right. So the Commodore 65 was actually, they kind of shut that down once Commodore was, folding the doors anyway on about 1990. So this, the Commodore 65s that they had, they just sold off to the general public. And from what I understand, there's about 50 to 200 functioning units floating around out there. And there was one that sold on eBay for $23,000.
Wow.
So the thing, it looked like, the Commodore 128 had kind of like a white sleek looking
right
case to it.
Yep.
You know, sleeker than the 64, the big brown case. It was sleeker, looked like the Commodore 128, a little shorter, had ports on the side like the 64 did, with mm-hmm. like for a joystick and probably some video out or something like that. And built into it, off to the right hand side, was a 3.5-inch floppy drive. It was built into it. So
nice.
It wasn't like you had to buy the 1541 drive that's off to the side. You know, it was all part of it. And he loaded up a demo, and in the video, you could see the Commodore 64 screen. I'm sorry, 65 screen. And it, you know, had that blue on blue kind of look to it, but it had like, it said Commodore 65. It said copyright 1991, but in the article it said that they ceased production in 1990. So I'm not sure about that, but it had basic 10, that, you know, it had that in the display header. He loaded up a demo, and it kicked over into Commodore 64 mode, and then you run the demo again. Now, this is the surprising part, so I was ready for... We've seen the Christmas tree demo, the Christmas demo, right? From Commodore?
Yeah.
You've seen that before? Well, it was like this half-naked lady. I'm like, and it's like Commodore 65. I'm like, what is this? And it must have been somebody, not necessarily Commodore, that made the demo. Because I was like, there's no way. She's like bent over holding her breasts. I'm like, what are we looking at?
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. But it only showed like it did that for a little bit, moved it, hold the screen around, did a little bit of graphics, and that was about it. So I think somebody had written that, but it was a neat device anyway. I think it could have done well with a, you know, fan crowd kind of thing. Well, obviously $23,000 on eBay.
Somebody wants it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Wow. Heck of a find.
Yes.
Media Corner.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
This is where we should play Good News.
Good news, everyone!
Well, I don't know if this is actually good news or if it's just an insight. We've been waiting a long time for the next Star Wars movie, but we've been waiting even longer for a sequel to Spaceballs, Mel Brooks' Star Wars spoof. But now Brooks says he actually wants to make this happen, and he aims to start work on it soon after The Force Awakens comes out. Now, I just for fun, I had to go back and watch Spaceballs this past week.
Oh, yeah.
It holds up well. It's still funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
Redditor Call Me Obadiah heard Brooks discussing the possibility of a Spaceballs sequel on Adam Carolla's Take a Knee podcast, and E! Online has the exact quote from Brooks. If I did a movie that came right after Star Wars comes out, you know, maybe a couple months later, Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money. Isn't that what he was going to call it?
Yeah.
Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money. I'd have a big weekend, you know, no matter what, even if it fell on its ass and, you know, didn't get that money back. But that first weekend, the anticipation of seeing Spaceballs 2 would, you know, I still have Daphne Zuniga, and I still have Rick Moranis if he'd do it, and I've got me.
Yeah, that's right.
He could be Yogurt. No, wait, what happens to Yogurt in The Force Awakens? We don't know. So
I would love to see it again.
Sadly, no more John Candy, though.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't have barf in there.
No barf.
So, yeah, I remember I just read a... We talked about it this last week. I read an article from Rick. There was an interview with Rick Moranis, and he said, I think a long time ago, he had mentioned to Mel Brooks that he would like to do a sequel, also call it Spaceballs 3, The Search for Spaceballs 2.
That would be a good title as well.
that would be hilarious.
And but finally, if...
Would you be down for a Spaceballs 2?
Yes. I'm a Mel Brooks fan.
I think there's plenty of material, Star Wars and Star Trek related.
Definitely. And speaking of Star Trek, as if Shatner didn't have a big enough ego already, now his face is on some legal currency. There are beautiful new Star Trek coins that can actually be used as legal tender in the Pacific Island nation of Tuvalu. On one side, the coins feature the face of Elizabeth II, and on the other side, you could have either Captain Kirk or the USS Enterprise. Made out of almost pure silver, the coins will soon be available for purchase from the Perth Mint in Australia.
Hmm. Okay.
They are very nice looking coins. I don't know if they're colorized here for graphic demonstration.
That would be a little weird to have, have a colored coin. I know
the Franklin Mint has come out with some of the proofs that they've done that, like the Double Eagle Lady Liberty thing where they've painted them in some way.
Right.
So this might be that kind of thing, but hey, maybe it's just colorized here just for demonstration or for internet photography purposes.
Hmm. Neat.
Neat. I want to see one of those. I wonder how much they cost.
Hey, I wonder if we can get this in Bitcoin.
Put Shatner's face on Bitcoin.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of, real quick, I know we're getting a little long here, but the Star Trek Continues fan film extravaganza.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? Well, they're doing a Kickstarter. That's what they called it. It was a Kickstarter campaign. I think it's probably done by the time this show is aired. But it looks like they raised enough money. They were looking for $100,000. They got like $185,000. And that would afford them to be able to produce two episodes and also upgrade the set for the engineering and develop a planet set. So they'll be able to visit a planet.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to it. I really like that series. They've only got like four episodes. I know the Star Trek New Voyages has more than that, but the dude that plays Kirk on Star Trek Continues, there's times I'll look at him like, that's William Shatner reimagined, really. I mean,
I'll have to take a look close at that.
Yes, that's the good stuff. There's like four episodes. You got to watch them.
All right. We are going to leave you with a question, beautiful listener. Pi Day is coming up, March 14th. And to celebrate that, I want to ask you a question, and you can phone in or send your email, which I'll give you details in a moment. What would you build if you got your hands on the new Raspberry Pi? Now, if you don't know what that is, go look. It's spelled just like it sounds, Raspberry Pi. It's a little $35 motherboard that has HDMI, Ethernet, USB. What is it? 1 gig of RAM. Processor, they've just upped the specs on it too for the Raspberry Pi 2.
That's right.
And I believe the Raspberry Pi 2 comes with a free license of Windows 10. So that opens up some opportunities as well. It's not just a pure Linux play anymore.
Really? Really?
Okay. That's what I saw. I'll have to verify that for you. But what would you build if you got your hands on a Raspberry Pi? Imagine big. You know, you can tie this thing into lots of things. Just go Google some projects and get some ideas. We want to hear what you want to build. Or even better, if you're already building something out of your Raspberry Pi, we want to hear about that as well. You can get a hold of us by calling the listener line at 206-222-2428, 206-222-CHAT, or email us technorama@chuckchat.com. We would love to hear from you. If you don't have a Raspberry Pi and you just wish you had one, what would you make out of it? That's what we want to know. Which takes
a Linux desktop. Hey, we should do some kind of giveaway.
That's a good idea. That's a good cheap thing to give away.
Let's talk about that and we'll come up with something for next episode.
Alrighty. Get a hold of us on the listener. Thank you very much to Doug and Myron for their contributions to the show notes. The articles you contributed, we want to hear from you as well. If you can't think of anything to make out of a Raspberry Pi, but you come across some crazy story on the internet and you think, hey, that sounds like Technorama material, let us know. We want to hear from you. Thank you to Mad Marv for the blog content during this week. Thank you, Craig, for being here this week. You're the only other person who showed up. Maybe
Chuck,
we'll have more next
you're
week.
Quite welcome, Chuck.
And I will work on getting the voice back in shape. Thank you to my lovely wife, Donna, who makes this whole show possible. Because while she's doing the rest of the house, I get to do this. Give me a 101, Craig.
101.